Sahel is a region that faces many challenges for FAO, especially to guarantee food security. We have now around 20 million people food insecurity in the region, what means one out of eight people that live in the region. Food production has been little increased last year, only 1% in 2013, but due to the population growth, the per capita availability has come down 10%, a minimum. So this has even increased the very bad situation that we had before. FAO also is looking for the prices that in the region are exceptionally high, even when compared for the last 5 years after the spike of price in 2008 and 2009. And as you all know, we are now preparing for the next planting season that will be only a few weeks ahead. And this is what added urgency to the event that we are here today. We, in 2013, FAO successfully supported around 2.5 million people. We are planning 2014 to support 7.4 million people. But we need for that around $115 million to do the work. We know that our experience shows that the best action is when you could prevent things to occur. In terms, including finance terms, every dollar that we invested in early agriculture support, we can save up to $20 in food assistance later. So this number multiplied to 20 efforts is very significant. And we hope that we can build resilience before the draw affect the region, as we did early. I would like to, again, thank you, the presence, and highlight again the urgency of this meeting for support the Sahel this new year. Thank you.
Mr. Prodi, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you for the invitation, and thank you to the director of FAO and the coordinator for humanitarian aids to the Sahel. I want to, the first statement is to pick up the recommendation of the director of FAO to push for this purpose, because in my mandate of special envoy, I have had the experience that the diplomatic environment, the political environment in the world, is forgetting Sahel. This is the first terrible message, you know. In my first trips around the world, Sahel was a priority. Now Syria, now Egypt, now other problems. And, you know, if we don't push, people and politicians will forget it. And the situation is still, well, is even worse, you know. It's we have 20 million people in danger for food, five really undernourished, and I could list a lot of other problems, you know. And I don't want to insist on that, because you know or you imagine so well what is happening in this difficult area, still unstable from the political point of view, still full of terrorist problems, with porous borders as we have in this area. So today the idea is to give a multi-sectorial answer to a complex humanitarian problem. People will not go back to there because of the insecurity. We know how difficult it is to cultivate land or to fish if there is insecurity, and we need a multi-sectorial response. Second, we need, and this is the message I received by Piper and his aides, an emergency humanitarian aid that is not only in emergency. Let's say we need to prepare to the bad news or to the bad event. And the idea to have a 3 years project is really a great progress, and in my experience is absolutely needed, because when you arrive late with a humanitarian aid, is late, and half of the problem is already in danger. Third, we have to keep the nutrition problem linked with all other aspects. Let's say the problem of health, the problem of education, the problem of normal social life, and the danger, and also the dangers. Dangers of conflict, danger of pestilence, and this is the reason why an early action to coordinate and to prepare for these chronic problems is so important. Fourth, here we have the chance to have all the 9 countries interested in the problem. And one, in my experience, a real problem is that the cooperation, the coordination among this country has been always weak. And in many cases, experts and people working in this field that are full of goodwill, they could never work together because of a lack of political cooperation. And so the cooperation with the government to prepare the humanitarian strategy and to cope with the next crisis, and not only to the past crisis, is now a priority. And this is the message that we have received that we have to send today, but this message has a lot of implication, you know, because we need a monitoring system collecting data, we need to prepare to these events, and this is a very, very top responsibility. And we go back in the end of this short message to the beginning of my message, the necessity of financial requirements. Even in, you know, in this trying to collect resources, we must coordinate the group that was specialized for Mali, my mission for long-term development, this indispensable action that you are doing for let's say humanitarian aid. We must keep a strong coordination, exchange data, because the problems are strongly connected.
Grazie, Presidente Prodi. Mr. Piper, you have the floor now.
Thank you very much, Director General, Professor Prodi, ladies and gentlemen. So today we are launching our new humanitarian plan for the Sahel. The plan covers the region of the Sahel and the 9 countries that make up a part of the Sahel, that is Senegal, Gambia, Mauritania, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, Chad, Nigeria, and Cameroon. As you've heard and read in the press materials, the needs have increased again this year. In particular, the number of food insecure has gone up from around 11 million in 2013 to above 20 million in 2014. Malnutrition rates, acute malnutrition rates, remain very high. Around 5 million children are projected to be acutely malnourished in 2014. We have a caseload of 1.6 million displaced people and refugees across the region. 20 million people are threatened by epidemics in the year ahead. The needs are there across the whole region, but we've certainly had progress in some countries. Northern Mali and Mali itself, for example, we've certainly seen a lot of progress over the 12 months, dramatic progress, so much so that we need to invest now in shelter and other kits to help displaced people return home successfully. Burkina Faso has reduced its caseload quite dramatically. Its budget request will go down by 20% in 2014. However, the good news is balanced by a big jump in needs in three countries in particular where it's most acute proportionally. It's Nigeria and particularly the states in the north. It is the northern Sahelian parts of the Cameroon. And it is Senegal, where food insecurity has also jumped up quite dramatically from 300,000 to over 2 million in 2014. Today we are appealing for $2 billion of humanitarian funding for the operation in 2014. This is up from $1.7 billion in 2013. $2 billion will allow us to extend assistance to 12 million food insecure people across the region. 4.5 million acutely malnourished children and pregnant mothers. It will allow us to assist and support 700,000 refugees and to extend assistance to some 17 million people across the region that are at risk of epidemics. The region remains very fragile. Underlying poverty, many of these countries are at the very bottom reaches of the Human Development Index. Limited access to basic services, a very erratic climate which is having catastrophic consequences for farmers and pastoralists, and a sense of regional contagion. We can make progress as we have in Mali, progress in Mali one day, but see a spillover effect, a negative one, in Niger next door. Or Central African Republic, Nigeria, Northern Nigeria now. So it's a region which is very much porous, as Professor Prodi said. This leaves millions of families just hovering over the crisis line. They're okay if everything lines up nicely, but it takes a very small push to push millions of families across the line into crisis. Given these constraints, we need to approach the situation differently in a region with chronic problems. This is not a sudden cyclone in the Philippines, for example, but a region that is facing chronic challenges. And we are working differently in light of this. We are focusing on building resilience of families, intervening very early as the signals are seen in order to catch them before they lose too many of their assets. We're working much closer in this region than perhaps anywhere else as humanitarians with the governments and the development partners to invest in the underlying issues. We are investing in more joined-up approaches amongst different sectors, as Professor Prodi said. And for the first time, we're embarking on a three-year plan, so we work more systematically around these very, very complex issues. Let me close by underlining, and I'm very, very delighted to see Ms. Georgieva arrive also. Let me close by underlining that we do have an ongoing emergency in the Sahel again, and time is of the essence. I spoke of 20 million people at risk of food insecurity in 2014. 2.5 million of them need assistance today. They have crossed an emergency threshold. But 17.5 million of them have not. They are at risk, they are under pressure, but it is absolutely crucial that we move fast enough to keep those 17.5 million on the right side of this crisis line, and that requires itself a very rapid response, a big emphasis on protecting their assets, on building up their agricultural capacities and so forth. I see also Nancy Lindborg has arrived. So let me close there and thank you for your attention.
Mrs. Georgieva, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. I apologize for the delay. I'm sure you got it that we were in another meeting on another huge humanitarian emergency on the Syria crisis, and certainly not one to leave without wrapping it up well. I am very grateful to UN OCHA and personally to Mr. Piper for bringing us together with a new approach to how we raise funding and organize assistance to the Sahel region. Crucial to break with the tradition of synchronized appeal with appeals for everybody else and rolling it on an annual basis. I heard this proposal when we first met with Mr. Piper, and I am so delighted that you have not waited too long to implement this new approach. Allow me, I'm sure you have the previous speakers. I'm so privileged to be on a panel in front of you with very eminent speakers that they have covered the situation. I just want to make 3 points from the perspective of the European Union as the largest humanitarian donor for the Sahel. First, that every year is tough for the people in the Sahel. We have to recognize that. But even more so will be this year. And this is in a cycle that is becoming shorter and shorter of people being hit by a crisis that normally should be coming every 10, 15 years and now is appearing every 2-3 years. What it means is that not only we are worried about 20 million people at risk, but that this 20 million and maybe others have their capacity to cope and adjust depleted tremendously because they were hit by a crisis in 2012 and by a crisis in 2010. So that recognition of shortening the cycle of crisis and weakening the capacity of people to cope is very well recognized in the appeal and certainly very well recognized by my colleagues in the EU, in the EU Humanitarian Service. Secondly, what it also means is that we have to bring resources to bear very quickly. And I'm very pleased to announce that the European Commission, on behalf of the European people, is making available 142 million euros, this is about $194 million, in humanitarian funding for the countries of the Sahel for 2014. And I also want to assure everybody that what we have put in our worldwide decision for the Sahel will be implemented in full. I know there have been some concerns. Rest assured that we would do in full what we have promised. And I would not exclude that we might do even more, and we certainly would do a lot to lobby our member states as well to make sure that others bring their resources to bear. And third, we would do only half service to the people in the Sahel if we concentrate on meeting the immediate needs. We would do full service to the people of Sahel if we work collectively to build their resilience to the inevitable hammer of more frequent, more devastating natural disasters. And that commitment to resilience we take to heart. In April, we will have a milestone meeting in Paris on our AGIR program, Alliance Globale pour l'Initiative de Résilience, and I hope that all countries by then would have their priorities. We made 1.5 billion euros available from our development budget to support building resilience in the Sahel. And everything we do on the humanitarian side we try to connect with this transformation for the work in the region. Finally, on a very personal note, it was in Chad, in this region, where as a commissioner, but much more as a mother and a grandmother, I got my biggest lesson in humility. When we went to a clinic for malnourished children, we walked in the room, all of us in the room with more than 40 children, and the room was quiet. There was no sound because the children were so weak, they wouldn't laugh, nothing to laugh about, but they couldn't even cry. And the memory of this quiet room, of this deafening silence in this room, would haunt me forever, and I would do everything I can for rooms like this to never exist anywhere, but in particular in the Sahel. Thank you.
Mrs. Nancy Lindborg, Assistant Administrator for the Bureau for Democracy, Conflict and Humanitarian Assistance. Mrs. Lindborg, you have the floor.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. And thanks to Director General Graziano for hosting us for the event. And to Robert Piper for the leadership on presenting, on putting together a different kind of appeal. As you've heard from the other speakers, it is time to create new strategies for addressing what are cyclical emergencies that emerge both from the chronic poverty of the Sahelian region, coupled with these ever-fasting disasters. And kudos to the many ministers of the region and the country leadership that has worked diligently over the last several years to really go hand in hand with the development partners to come up with new ways of doing business, not just responding to crises, but looking at longer term strategies that enable us to get upstream from the crisis. In 2012, so 2 years ago this month, that we galvanized action in response to a drought that threatened 18 million people. 2 years ago this month, I had a chance to visit both Niger and Burkina Faso, where I was able to see the devastation of many communities, especially the children under five. But I also had a chance to visit some communities where, because of investments in resilience, I met women like Safieta, who was growing a thriving onion crop, even in the midst of the drought, and able to send all of her children to school and to withstand this kind of crisis. And so it's with that in mind that we joined in partnership with our development partners, with the leadership of the region, to really rethink how we're doing business. And for in that aim, I'm very pleased to announce today the coming to fruition of an initiative that USAID has been working on called RISE, which stands for Resilience in the Sahel Enhanced. And this is $130 million that we have committed for the first 2 years of a five-year effort to build resilience in targeted zones of in Niger, in Burkina Faso, specifically to help families and communities get ahead of the next shock. And we have brought together the humanitarian and development parts of USAID to sit together to work with local leadership to rethink how we bring our humanitarian and development investments together to strengthen institutions, to look at sustainable economic well-being, to really build resilience in the communities that are most vulnerable to these shocks. The RISE initiative has a very clear target of reaching about just under 2 million people in these areas and enable them to move from vulnerability to viability and lessen the need for them to receive large packages of humanitarian assistance after a crisis has hit. We will be working through the RISE initiative very closely with civil society, local governments, our development partners, and the AGIR initiative that Kristalina noted, the Global Alliance for Resilience in the Sahel. We also remain very concerned about the urgent needs that need to be layered on top of the kind of initiative that we're doing with RISE. And so we're very pleased to be able to announce an initial and additional $85 million to meet the very urgent needs of about 1 million people in Chad, Mali, and Niger in response to this appeal. This is on the forefront. These efforts in the Sahel are on the forefront of really rethinking how we address crises and how we're able, by working in these partnerships, to get ahead of the kind of shocks that absolutely roll back all of our development gains, all of the efforts to help people move out of poverty. So we remain at USAID very committed to doing business differently, to help responses, even in the short term, add up to the long-term difference. This is vital to realizing the vision that President Obama articulated last year in terms of our commitments to contributing towards the end of extreme poverty by 2030. So I'm very pleased to be here today, and I'm very pleased to be working with the assembled folks in this room on doing so in the Sahel. Thank you.
Mrs. Amos?
There's a political reality we have to deal with here, which is not only about the crises that hit the headlines, and there are times when even Syria is not at the top of the headlines, and Kristalina Georgieva and I have spent a lot of time making sure that the world remembers the Central African Republic. So there's an issue about which crisis hit the headlines when. But for me, there's also something more fundamental, which is the impact that this has on policymaking. So it is always much harder to raise money for prevention, preparation, than it is to raise money after a crisis has hit. So we have to change the thinking inside governments and inside international organizations as well. Of course, we will all remain strong advocates for the countries of the Sahel. It is absolutely critical that we do that. Otherwise, the chronic nature of the crisis that we see in each of these countries will continue. But we also have to change the behavior of those who fund the response. And that's why it is so good to be sharing a platform with the European Union, with the United States, who have done this. They have recognized the importance of doing this. More of our partners are beginning to recognize this, and we hope that together we can work to put more money into prevention, which will maximize every single euro, dollar, pound that is spent on humanitarian response.